This is The Illusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, hold language under my chin like the torch in the Blair Witch Project. In today's show, two people, two beloved podcasters, talk about coining an expression. And might be great to be immortalised in the dictionary someday, less great to have had to lawyer up. On with the show.
Hi, we are Anne Friedman and Aminatou Sow, and we are the authors of the book Big Friendship, as well as the hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend.
And at some point between 2009, when they met and befriended each other, and 2013, when Anne used it in an article for New York Magazine, together, Aminatou and Anne coined the term shine theory.
You probably said to me first, I don't shine if you don't shine. And then it became a thing we said frequently to each other and to other friends.
I will confess that it is a lyric from the Killers album that I just enjoyed a lot. That is, if you're asking for the real etymology of that, I think, some of that is really some insider music joke from a long time ago, but the sentiment still stands.
We would say to each other frequently, I don't shine if you don't shine, and really came to understand it as a shorthand for the investment we have put into each other as friends and how hard we are willing to work to help each other achieve the things we want to achieve separately. And we also see it as a way of prioritizing collaboration over competition, which may otherwise be the default for certain people.
Shine theory is not necessarily a theory. It's a practice.
The point of shine theory really is modeling for each other how it can be different. And so I think that we are less focused on, intent or is someone doing this thing, rather than just showing them like, oh, here's a different way that you could be at work and here is a different way that you could be in your life.
It has resonated in particular with people who have been told that there may only be one seat at the table for those who look like them and that they need to be competing with their peers in that identity to be the one in the seat. And that is something we talk about explicitly as we talk about shine theory. So in some ways, we are focusing the conversation around women, around people of color, around people who are traditionally shut out of power. However, I don't know. I mean, I also sense, maybe I'm just talking about the men I know, a real desire to, share power, not hoard it. And I think that thinking about these questions of practicing how to be in supportive community with people feel pretty key to everyone getting free, not just, for example, women.
The point of modeling the behavior is really important for everyone because, regardless of your gender, I don't know that anyone at work is really taught to be an actually true and good team player.
One of the principles of shine theory is sharing power, not hoarding power.
I mean, hoarding power, it truly is the organizing principle of so much evil, any kind of evil institution. And I think that even very good people do not realize the harm that they do when they hoard power and they refuse to just shine a light on making that more accessible to other people. And, I think that when you come from a lack of resources, it is just very apparent to you what is going on there. But we really believe that, if you share your power, you can, in fact, get more power and maybe have more fun than if you were just hoarding it and being like a very selfish kind of asshole.
One way is transparency, being very open with each other about, how much money we're making, how we really have achieved something that we've achieved, or the roadblocks that we are facing. I think that sometimes it is tempting to look at a friend's life and just say like, oh, isn't that nice? all these things have just fallen into place for you. And we're really committed to transparency as part of shine theory, because when you start to pick it apart and share with someone who you care about, this is how I actually made it happen. It's easier to feel like you are in a collaborative spirit with that person rather than just feeling maybe resentful or judgy about what they've managed to land for themselves. So transparency is a big part of it, I think. And that is a practice. You can't just, you know, think yourself transparent. You actually have to share the details about what you have and how you got there.
Capitalism is not really, is not invested in making people actually genuinely care for each other and like each other. I think that for some people, there is genuine bewilderment that, you know, there is like a truly like not understanding that other people just do not have the same privilege that you do. Like, that is true. And then I think that for other people, there is also an understanding that if you share your resources, it will mean that in capitalism, ultimately, you have less power. And so I think that, you know, everyone is motivated for different reasons. Some people it's truly out of sheer ignorance, and some people it's truly out of sheer just wanting to be not a great person. But I don't believe that the way that we organize the workforce lends itself naturally to people just being kind to each other.
It's true. And also speaking about this, like from a particularly, you know, American perspective, this sense that you are an individual and all of your skills and knowledge those things are so particular to you and they form your unique advantage in the marketplace. That mythology goes really, really deep. And so, you know, while that is not something that I have come to believe in that way, you're working against some cultural stuff when you talk about this in the United States as well.
This could be the big post-capitalism movement.
God is willing.
Friendship? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Friendship is the big post-capitalist movement. This is what we are staking our lives on.
Interdependence, yes.
Yeah, we're like, interdependence forever. We believe it.
And diminishing hierarchies.
Always.
Would be great.
Always.
Would be great.
Although sharing is in the spirit of Shine Theory, that didn't mean they were happy for anyone to use it however they wanted to. Aminatu and Anne ended up having to trademark the term.
Oh, speaking of America.
Oh my God. Everything turns you into like an adversarial like entity in this country. You know, when we coined Shine Theory, there was no strategy behind it. Truly, it was two friends using the vocabulary within our friendship to really signal to each other something that we cared about. Anne, who is a columnist at New York Magazine, ended up writing about it. It resonated with a lot of people because, of course, why not just being nice to each other, not competing, and shining a light really on a practice that other people were doing but not necessarily had a word for, was something that resonated deeply. And of course, because it resonated deeply and widely, some people, you know, choose not to be nice about it. And so when I think it was maybe a couple of months after the article had come out, and we were noticing like a real groundswell of activity around it, and also people had started misusing it, essentially. And so we were trying to be attentive to that. And what's the best way to just make sure that people are using it the right way? Probably to just put it up on a website somewhere. And that way, anytime they Google it, they can just be like, Shine Theory, this is what it is. So we go to buy this website. And it turns out that someone else has not only already bought the website, it was a woman who was running some sort of boutique fitness. They have branded it in the most disgusting, just so anti the spirit of Shine Theory, and had the words Shine Theory plastered on it. There were pictures of other women in some sort of like beauty fitness competition.
There were so many abs and so much eye makeup.
So many abs, so much eye makeup, and the words just like, you know, like trademark across it. And if I'm honest, I blacked out after that moment. So everything that has transpired since has been a fever dream.
And I also believe that this website mentioned the article in New York Magazine, making it look like the two of us were somehow
affiliated,
giving our blessing to this effort. Like, we were mentioned in a way that was also extremely disingenuous, where a person is looking like they are like, yeah, I'm giving credit, but it seemed like a bit of a dodge, like, oh, I'm going to show you that these people are fine with it. We were very much not fine with it.
How did you get them to knock it off, if you indeed managed to get them to do that?
Oh, lawyers. We did not get them to do this ourselves. And so, you know, I think it was the first time, Anne, I believe that we had to use a lawyer together, that we had to.
Oh, the first time we used a lawyer together. Aww.
I know. It's so American. It's so American and beautiful. Our legal marriage, our legal union consummated over a fight over a trademark. Yeah, I mean, it was really, if I had to do that over again, I wish that we had not had to do that. So much of the legal battle around Shine Theory was not to establish like our own imprint on it, was really to protect it against people who were trying to do this very kind of thing.
Right. And then there was a whole process as well of not just getting this other person to stop using it, but then trying to establish the trademark for ourselves, which I don't think we would have set out to do otherwise, but requires you to say, this is how we're making money off of something. Again, because America. And that was not a goal we had either. You know, really what we wanted to do is just say, this is a thing we came up with and we want people to talk about it and we don't want people to market their fitness companies with it. Like that was our base desire.
We definitely got a couple of inquiries from tech companies where they wanted to use Shine Theory as the branding for their Women's History Month efforts, for example. Or, you know, name a conference after it. Mind you, they were not inviting us to come present at the conference or explain to them what was going on. They just wanted to slap Shine Theory over the effort. And, you know, my feeling is just pay the women in your company well, but that's just me. So there were things like that. We had, what else?
There were definitely uses of it in advertising or advertorial campaigns, spawn stuff.
Oh, yeah. Victoria's Secret.
Victoria's Secret, a conference called Create Cultivate.
Yeah. Reese Witherspoon definitely tried to brand some sort of interview series around it. All very flattering and nice, but not exactly the spirit in which we want Shine Theory to be used.
Because Shine Theory sounds like so accessible and fun. You know, it does not sound like an anti-capitalist rage anthem or anything like that.
Socialism in disguise.
Exactly. You know, like our much more radical views behind it were easy to elide by just saying like Shine Theory, when women support women, yay. And so that also happened where brands and events that were not really engaging with issues of power and collaboration, like we've just described to you, were using this phrase as a shorthand for things that were just not meaningfully addressing what Shine Theory addresses. And that was extremely frustrating. So that went on for years, even after we went and got the trademark and the website.
I don't know. I feel like so much of our conversation is always focused on how people are doing it wrong. But I really cannot overstate how just joyous and amazing it is to see how much it has resonated with people. And I think that it resonates not because we invented anything new. I think it resonates because this is a practice that so many people were naturally already doing. And it also feels good to do. I love the mail that we get from Girl Scout troop leaders, from teachers, from people at work who have found ways to really deepen their relationships together. And the people who are ruining it for us are really such a small, small, small corner of that. But I get so much joy from knowing that this is something that is alive and thriving and, you know, not just some like cutesy shorthand for empowering women.
Do you have any favorite examples of Shine Theory in action in a positive way?
Oh, I have a favorite. There is a marathon runner, Shalane Flanagan, who really noticed that she was one of the few women with real staying power in the sport of distance running. She noticed this trend that I think other people had clocked, which is that women would, you know, start strong maybe in like a college track and field program. And then once they got deeper into their adult lives, would fall off the competitive distance running circuit. And so rather than saying, oh, isn't it cool that I'm really the only woman here doing this thing? She started a training program, like essentially like a running group where she mentored women who were at the beginning of their adult distance running lives. And a really large percentage of those women went on to run huge marathons, like be serious competitors in this sport. And almost all of them credit her specific mentorship and investment in them. And I just love that story so much because she's literally training her competition, or what should be her competition. And instead, what she was really doing is creating community. The Shine Theory way of looking at that is she took a collaborative approach to a problem that she saw, which was that she was the only one.
I love that example, too, because you're right. It's literal, actual competition.
It's so concrete.
Right. It's so concrete. And she creates a cohort for herself, but also has said that her running has gotten better because of it, you know? And I think that seeing that in such a quantifiable way was so inspiring to both of us. And, you know, I'm like, if athletes can do this, who are you, office couch potato, for not like sharing?
You know, other people who coined a phrase might want to slap their own names on it. Get an eponym in the place. So Friedman Theory.
That sounds so dreadful. I can't even, I am just shuddering thinking about that.
That sounds like a medical syndrome for people who can't explain their feelings. The So Friedman problem.
Aminatou Sow and Anne Friedman are the hosts of the podcast Call Your Girlfriend and the authors of the new book Big Friendship, which is out now. And coming up in today's Mini-Illusionist, we talk about another term Aminatou and Anne coined. Considering the many kinds of friendships we might have, we don't have a great deal of vocabulary to distinguish a friend, a true friend, from, say, your friend who's your favourite work colleague but you don't see outside of work, or a person you like but only see through a mutual friend. Someone you've known since childhood but don't necessarily have anything in common with now. That person who always greets you with, "Hey, buddy!" and a big slap on the back, but maybe you can't stand them. To distinguish their intense, close, exceptional friendship, Aminatou and Anne decided on the term big friendship.
Which is just our way of really delineating. There are some people who we call friend who are actually much more in the acquaintance department, or who are people that we have fallen out of touch with and are maybe actually like friend past tense. But a big friendship is someone who you are in an intimate, you know, long running friendship with, where you are both really committed to seeing the friendship through for the long haul. And we needed a term that wasn't bestie, which is definitely, you know, we have called each other besties, or like BFF, things like that just feel a little young, I guess, for the kind of adult friendship that we are talking about. And, you know, and also a little hierarchical. We are not each other's sole close friendship, and language matters. And so if you're calling someone your best friend and that doesn't really ring true, you need another word. And so, you know, big friendship is ours.
Have you trademarked it?
Oh my God, no.
Preemptively.
hoping to never have to deal with the trademark office ever again. Thank you.
Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is malversation, noun, formal. 1, corrupt behavior in a position of trust. 2, corrupt administration of public money, etc. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, thanks to Jackson Musker. Find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Illusionist Show. And to hear every episode of the show or read the transcripts thereof, find out more about all the topics and the people talking about them, to see the full dictionary entries of the words of the day, and a lexicon of every word ever covered in the show, visit the show's forever home, theillusionist.org.